So, tonight I thought I'd talk a little bit about acceptance. There's a lot of misunderstanding about such a powerful tool that can really concretely help us achieve and find lasting peace in life. When we hear the word acceptance, it can sound a little bit like giving up, resignation, surrender. And there might be some elements of surrendering to it, but really what acceptance is, and I'm going to go through showing all the actions and the various different fields of endeavor that acceptance plays out in. But acceptance is actually a way to find lasting happiness, one that entails putting aside our campaigns for happiness that are leading nowhere, and to find it in areas of our lives where we can, in fact, feel a great sense of inner esteem and a great source of peace that's sustainable. So it's basically a stepping away from the ways we've been trying to find happiness, seeing what's going on, and then locating ways that we can, in fact, achieve what we've been searching for so long, which is a purpose, a state of ease, a state of serenity. A little bit, for example, obviously the alcoholic who accepts that he cannot drink, that's not him giving up happiness. That's the beginning of his possibility of finding happiness, because he's giving up looking for it in the places that are causing him suffering. Much so in life, if we're stuck in relationships, jobs, various different endeavors that are causing stress, and we're bumping up against insurmountable walls. It's taking a step back rather than trying to exert our will and push forward or keep on thinking of the magic thing we can do or say to get our way. We can often then begin to find a true solution that works, to find lasting peace. The reason acceptance is such a powerful tool and such a paradoxical one is generally we try to find our happiness by controlling the world around us, the people around us, changing our environment, the people that we're surrounded with, the people we're in relationships with, so that the idea being that if everything went smoothly out there, that inside will feel fine. And of course, rarely people cooperate. And even if they do for a little while, we don't feel that lasting sense of ease that we've been searching for. The good news is that because all of our experience is created by our own minds, because the mind is the tool that creates the world we live in, simply changing our attitude towards what we're experiencing can create the happiness that we're not finding by trying to get it, by changing the sensations we see out in the world. We might not get people to say the things we want them to say, to give us the endless approval and recognition. We may not get all the power or prestige or material wealth or whatever we're searching for, but we can sometimes, by the simplest shifts in attitude, open the mind up to untold feelings of just ease and letting go, because we've forgotten that the just how much of a role the mind is playing in creating the stress and creating the happiness that we're capable of experiencing. I'm going to go a little bit more into detail and concretize that. If it sounded a little abstract, don't worry about it. I'm going to sort of talk on each of the different levels. So starting with the material field, obviously we tend to feel that we look around and we live in New York, around New York, and it's a place where there's a lot of wealth and a lot of people striving to own things. People get measured by their jobs and apartments and stuff like that. And so there's this sense of trying to get to fill that hole in us of, why am I here? What am I doing in this life I've been given? How do I feel connected with other people? How do I feel I have a purpose? People try to get that often through things, through careers. And of course, that's called the hedonic treadmill. The more we get, we need even more and more and more, and it never really fills that hole. More often, though, we wind up in conflict with other people because we're chasing after limited resources. Other people want the same jobs, the same galleries showing their artwork, the same recognition. So it opens us up to a lot of conflict. The Buddha taught that actually that when we begin to develop inner spiritual lives, we find that we need so much less in the material plane than we ever suspected to be really, truly happy. He listed the four requisites, which are we do need enough food to sustain the body comfortably. We need enough clothing so that we'll be comfortable throughout the year. We need enough shelter so that we'll be warm and protected from people who are up to no good. And we need self-care in the form of medicine and exercise to keep the body healthy. Unfortunately, most of us haven't learned from that wise monk Mick Jagger. who told us that rather than getting caught up with what we want, the real issue is to try to see what we really need and to get that. I was actually once at a retreat with Noah, and the challenge became to drop a Metallica song lyrics into a Dhamma talk. I totally forgot. I was going to try to get something from Masters of Puppets or something in there and just totally forgot the entire thing. Just got wrapped up in my Dharma talk and forgot the most important thing, which was dropping a Metallica. So we need the four requisites, but we generally get caught with, because we're so feeling this sense of emptiness that we're not addressing, this feeling of tension perhaps, that we need more and more. We go well past what we really need to sustain ourselves. And we instead try to fill ourselves with things. And that's when we get in trouble, because it never lasts. Whatever we accumulate beyond our basic needs, we get bored with. We become used to it. It becomes not enough. There's a lot of wonderful sociological experiments on this very subject. So, but if we have just enough, paradoxically, we really value what we have. If you've ever hung around with monks, hung around with like Ajahn Amaro or Susito or Jeff, and They only have their robes and their bowls, but boy, do they really take care of their robes and their bowls. Their bowls look really, really shiny and beautiful. Because that's it. And they really treasure it. And they treasure the few things they have because they know that those are the only things they really need to be truly happy. And spiraling out, getting caught up in an endeavor to get more and more, leads them to trouble rather than to peace. So what is the key to accepting that we have enough and letting go of endeavors, cravings to get more and more things? The key is gratitude, which is basically the signal to ourselves to stop that mind that's flowing outwards, fixating on the next pair of shoes or hoodie or whatever that we think will fix us, and instead really take stock of what we've accumulated to feel good that we have enough, and to signal the mind to, instead of flowing outwards wanting, we're now, it's time to reassess and feel a sense of ease over having enough. We're sabotaging that, what the Buddha called asava, the flowing out, looking for happiness outside of ourselves. And to do that, it's not an intellectual endeavor. We have to literally develop gratitude to counteract the mind that is caught up in craving. Because just telling ourselves that craving is not leading us anywhere will not stop it. It's an action. It's like a muscle we have to build. Then, of course, there's the realm of other people. If there's any area where it's really difficult to develop acceptance, it's with those pesky other people. When it comes to dealing, the actions of dealing with people, the Buddha kept it really simple. Why? Because we tend to make it really complicated. There's generally three kinds of people. There's the people we want to gravitate towards because they're really skillful, which means they're not causing harm. They have wonderful insights that they can share with us. There's people who are safe to share what we're going through. There are people who are, at the same moment, not judgmental, but are supportive, are consistent, are not causing harm to anyone, are not giving in to short-term solutions, but are in fact capable of seeing what's in their best interest in the long term, as well as the people around them. So that's the first group we want to gravitate towards. Then there's the second group, which are the people you want to avoid. And those people have the exact opposite attributes. These are people who are causing harm through extensive self-centeredness, who, no matter what spiritual tools you employ, you cannot be around them without it incurring lasting suffering for yourself, a lowering of your self-esteem. You find yourself taking actions that you no longer feel good about, saying things that you no longer feel good about. And then there is the largest group, by far and away, which is the people we have to tolerate, the rest of us. Tolerate, be with, live in the world with. This is the bulk. They're not the wise friends that we seek out to unburden ourselves with, but they're not the people that we avoid because danger or harm is necessarily following. These are the people that have things that can be good about them, but they also have annoying traits that we wish that we could get rid of. And sometimes we wind up in relationships with these people. They become family members. They become people we have sex with or share apartments with or work at offices with. And generally what happens is when these people do things we don't like, we become slightly irritated, and then we make a demand. The demand could be nicely put or not nicely put, but it's generally, hey, I don't like it when you do this or that. Unfortunately, we find through experience that people don't change when they're confronted with a demand. In fact, people do what's known as they retrench. When they feel attacked or criticized, they become even more glued to their ways. Because that's what people do. They become more reactive when they feel that they're being judged or criticized. So the Buddha said when we're dealing with all people, whether the people we gravitate towards, the people we don't gravitate towards, or the people that we learn to tolerate, we have to develop four tools. The first is wanting them to find lasting peace. That's not rewarding them. That's simply saying, I hope this person finds peace within. If somebody's acting unskillfully, if they find peace within, they'll generally act more skillfully. Because when people cause harm, it's because inside they're suffering. They're stressed out. And they're taking the stress out on the people around them. The second thing we want to do is if we see somebody suffering, we want to develop compassion, which means, it doesn't mean we have to lift them up or rescue them so much as develop a sense of empathy for the fact that we've suffered too, they're suffering, that it's part of the human experience, so that we don't judge them from a distance of being superior. This in turn builds up a sense of connectedness rather than defensiveness when we're around somebody who's suffering. So many people, when somebody's not doing well, especially when it comes to sicknesses, avoid them. If we can develop an empathy, though, we can become more connected and more skillful in the way we relate to others. The third is appreciation. Sometimes dealing with other people is seeing that they're doing really well in a certain endeavor when we're not. And appreciation is rather than getting bent out of shape, the Buddha called this mudita. Instead of getting bent out of shape, we appreciate that they're happy. And that's important, because the suffering that we can feel, feeling that other people are getting ahead when we're not, doesn't affect them. It just makes us miserable. But the fourth most important form of acceptance that the Buddha taught when it comes to other people is equanimity, upekkha. And what that means is knowing when we've spent enough time and when it's time to move on. This is the truest form of acceptance. Sometimes we can really want to rescue someone. We can really want to rescue a relationship. We can really want somebody to hear our truth who's not hearing it. Could be a parent, a sibling. We could really want to be appreciated when we're not appreciated. And there comes a time to see, okay, I've put the effort in. It's not working out. It's time to move on. That doesn't mean we move on with anger or resentment. In fact, the key to developing equanimity is having the capability of forgiving. Forgiveness is the key of not carrying the story on with us as we move on. Analogous is to this is a heart surgeon who's seeing patients. Some of the people he sees he'll be able to help, and some of the people he sees he won't be able to help. Now, if you were waiting to see the heart surgeon and the heart surgeon got so caught up in somebody he couldn't help, commiserating, trying to figure out a way to help them even though their condition was just not repairable by the doctor, you can see how much I know about it.
fucking hearts hurt.
I always start using these analogies about which I know absolutely nothing. So, but you'd want that heart surgeon to move along and get to you, right? You wouldn't want him to just get caught up in a case where there's nothing good coming out of it. So if you can make something of that analogy, congratulations. The idea is in life we have to know when certain relationships are, you know, that the way we're going about it is not working. Sometimes we have to take a break from people. And we tend to view these breaks as like they're going to last forever, and they generally don't. We can generally often just say to ourselves, you know what, the way I've been trying to communicate with this person is not working. I'm going to take a break rather than trying one more time to get through the wall. Sometimes just stepping back and acknowledging that right now it's not working and going to a place where we are having successful communication can build up the ability then to go back and find a way through. Einstein used to say that his solutions never came by thinking about them, but by putting them down and walking away from them. And then when he'd come back to them, he'd have a new way of looking at it. And that's what the key of acceptance often is. It's, okay, I see, it's not working out right here, right now, with this person. It could be their past actions or my past actions or something that's just not hooking up. But rather than putting more energy into it, I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to find peace somewhere else. Just putting this aside for a little while. Almost every friendship I've had for many, many years has had times where the friendship has been put on hold for a little while. Not because there was any enmity or conflict, but simply because people need to make sense and take stock of their lives, reprioritize, and you give permission to do that. The ability to have this kind of balance, this kind of compassion, this kind of wisdom goes hand in hand with the gratitude that we develop towards having enough in our lives to be happy in the outside world. They really build off of each other, and they make it possible for us also to have a rich inner experience, just like having inner peace allows us to make do externally with less than we think that we need. When somebody has a really good spiritual practice, a really strong spiritual practice, they are so less in conflict with people and so less bent out of shape about the little frustrations in life that used to annoy them, and so less wrapped up about material success because they know they have a source of peace available to them no matter what. All of this is about balance. It's not about giving up careers or giving up having a place to live or clothes. It's about balancing. Balancing finding peace within, balancing being skillful externally, so that we're not trying to get from the world or get from the people around us the happiness that we're missing inside. So all of these forms of acceptance balance each other out. Now, when it comes to inner acceptance, when we look within, the first thing we focus on is the body and the breath. And inevitably what happens is we find it's uncomfortable, because we're so externally focused for most of our lives trying to get a sense of accomplishment out there, that when we look inwards, we find that the body has become really, really just a suitcase of stress. If you ever I work occasionally in an industry that's crazy. And you go into these offices, and people are walking around like their shoulders, and they're all, their bodies are deformed. Not from injuries, from stress, from years of just like you see this, ah! Why are you walking like that? And they're so caught up in these like battles with clients and getting things done, and it's a so you see what happens if there's not an when people get so caught up, they're so out with their jobs, their careers, their relationships, their families, their, you know, fights with other tenants, whatever, then they're unaware of just the level of contraction and tension that's being built up. Because when we're at war or in conflict with the world, it builds up inside. To be in conflict with the world, we have to be tense on the inside. We need to feel protected. And so when we stop and we finally look within, we suddenly might encounter all this contraction. The body is like, suddenly we're like, whoa, I didn't know there's all this going on. The mind is jumpy. There's all this nervous energy. The stomach might feel overly tight. The jaw might be locked. Sometimes people have this breaking through in the forms of panic attacks, where literally the body's discomfort breaks through and interrupts the agendas of life. So when we encounter all the stress, the mind wants to immediately distract itself with the world. It's like, oh shit, that's another mess in there. Fuck that. It's the last thing I need. The last thing I need is even more mess in my life. I'm just going to go and clean up, deal with this thing out there, because, boy, when I look inwards, that's difficult. I feel anxious. I feel like I'm not taking care of things. My body feels tight. I don't like it. So the trick is to develop what's known as sati sampujana, which is a mind state that is very caring and very attentive and non-judgmental. And we're going in, like one of the monks I studied with says, we're going into our bodies like we're an archaeologist from Mars lowering into a human body. And the Martian archaeologist is going, oh, this is what it's like to be a human being. This is what a tight stomach feels like. This is what a jaw that's locked and nervous feels like. This is what a breath that's anxious feels like. And rather than coming at it from a place of there's something wrong, we simply see, okay, we know what's going on. And rather than try to escape from it because it feels difficult, we simply go into it from the perspective of caring about ourselves, wanting ourselves to feel at peace. And we can't feel at peace in the world if we are stressed out inside. When we're stressed out inside and we're unaware of it, it means we're just going to jump from one thing to another, to another, to another, to distract ourselves externally, but we'll never land on something that makes us truly comfortable. Why? Because we're stressed out inside. So we do the work directly because we care about ourselves. We want to find lasting comfort in our lives. We go in with a mind state that is open to seeing what's going on and is trying to release or give ease where it's possible without forcing the issue. And again, in our inner experience, equanimity plays, because as we look through the body, sometimes we're going to find areas that are just stressed out and will not be released, no matter how much we try. And rather than keep going at it, sometimes we have to acknowledge, okay, I just right now am really, really tense. My back is tense. I've got back pain. I'm not oxygenating the muscles. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm just going to wish this part of my experience well, and I'm going to keep relaxing every other part of the body so that as I come back, at least I'll come back to this state with a minimum amount of stress around it. Sometimes, for instance, if we have a pain in a leg when we're meditating, when the pain's there, there's not only the pain in the leg, but then there's a reaction to it in the body. The stomach might get tight because we're in pain in the leg, and there's this, oh no, I'm in pain. So if we can relax the stomach and everything else, the pain in the leg becomes far less unbearable. We can then go in and start massaging the breath through the body pain. And we can be with it. We can focus into the pain and see what's comprised of it. The key with Sati Sampujana is going step by step through each element of the body, not viewing the body from a distance as something beneath us, but really lowering our awareness in. So we really, it's like James Cameron in that submarine that's going to the bottom of the ocean. We're going into a basement you haven't been in for a while. You got that flashlight and there's all those boxes of shit and you don't really want to look in there because, oh no, I wonder what my mother put in that box. It could be really embarrassing. You know, oh no, this might be something that I really don't want to confront. But you go down there anyway because you want to clear out and you want to get in touch with what you've not been looking at. I hope that made sense to somebody. So finally, concluding with, once we've relaxed the body, then we open up to the thoughts. The trick with this is keeping ourselves grounded in the body so that we won't get sucked into the stories that will drag us away and shroud us in all these visions of horror shows that are going to happen. Unless we follow our thoughts, we'll be alone forever, we'll be fired, we'll be unloved. You must listen to me. I must. So if we argue with these thoughts, we will lose. Why? Because we'll have abandoned the body, which will become stressed out and tense again. We'll be trapped in the mind with this thought, which is really just fear or anger, whatever it is, it's never going to go away. Fear and anger always return and show up in different forms. The good news is that we can learn to be with fear and anger without it dictating our lives. We can, instead of being up there, letting the fear, you know, fear is like a, it's like an insane person that wants to lure you into an alleyway where it's got really horrible things it wants to show you. You don't want to go near it. You don't want to argue with it. You don't argue with an insane person on the street screaming that the world is going to end. You just want to say hi. And you keep moving on the other side of the street. And that's the body. That's where the body comes in. It keeps us grounded. It's a little bit like we're fish at the bottom of the ocean. And that's, the thought is a bait. And it's got really nice bait. It's dangling there. But you don't want to take the bait. You want to stay at the bottom of the ocean eating the plankton. I feel like Tom Waits giving a Dharma talk. I just said that because I actually
Right, that Tom Waits used to give bizarre instructions to his musicians that didn't make any sense. So anyway, the key is to not argue, to allow the thoughts, to welcome them, and to watch them from the outside. And then it's sort of like being in a party when you see somebody come in, and before you immediately go in and talk with them, you want to stand a little back and see if this person seems insane, or if they seem like somebody you want to get involved with, right? You don't have to go up to every fucker that comes into a party and get into a long conversation, because some of them will be a pain in the ass. They'll rope you into these awful conversations about their lives and their things, and your life will disappear. So you step back, and you're like, okay, that person's shouting. Maybe not a good idea. But funny thing is, when a shouting thought comes into our minds, we're like, oh yeah, okay, I'll go along with you. You're telling me that I'm going to die unless I, do this? Okay, I'll listen to you. You know, or the people that repeat themselves over and over and over and over and over again, you stand back. But again, those, when we see or hear these thoughts from the vantage of the body, we actually have a fighting chance of getting enough distance that we don't get trapped by the voices, we don't get pulled into the thought worlds, we instead can have just enough distance where we can decide if it's a thought that we want to get involved with, if it's leading us in a good direction. If it's a thought that's kind, that sounds intelligent, that's not freaking out, you might want to go a little closer. Funny thing is, the most skillful voices in my head, they only say their ideas once. So you got to be really careful to hear them. Because the ones that are leading us in the wrong direction, they're really shouting. So we don't want to, we want to stay, we want to listen, we want to get enough distance, and we don't want to push away. We want to accept all of it, but take our time and get involved with the thoughts that are worthwhile. So all these tools, the equanimity that we practice with people on the outside, the gratitude we practice, the compassion we practice with people, we also practice with our inner experience. The equanimity we practice with other people, knowing when it's worthwhile to stay in a relationship and when it's time to put it aside for a little while. The same equanimity goes into looking at our thoughts, judging when there's a thought we can work with and when we can't. There's compassion for these thoughts if they're unskillful. There's a sense of appreciation for when we accomplish or act out on something virtuous. And the more we act out on virtuous, kind intentions, the smoother our relationships will be on the outside. It's the one great assurance the Buddha gave to the Kalamas. He said, beyond the fact that acting harmlessly will make you feel better, it will also make your relationships with other people go much smoother. So that's tonight's talk on acceptance. I hope that somewhere in there was something that you can use. I thank you for listening, and now it's your turn to share anything about tonight's conversation or tonight's talk that's of interest or that you need clarification on.
I actually just wanted to very briefly